Whether we realize it or not this morning, today is a significant day for a number of reasons for all of us. First, as many of us know, today, November 20th, marks the very last day, the end of this Jubilee Year of Mercy, which began last December 8th. And so I'd just like to take a few moments right away at the beginning this morning to reflect a bit on some of the highlights of this Year of Mercy, in which so many of us received an outpouring of God's mercy, and so many people throughout the world did in a very powerful way. In my life as a priest, I saw God's mercy at work in very, very powerful ways this last year. And so just a couple highlights of last Year of Mercy. First, here at the cathedral, of course, we had our beautiful holy doors available for people from throughout the diocese and beyond. And truly, we had countless people come on pilgrimage to our parish to walk through those doors of mercy and obtain special prayers and indulgence for their loved ones who have passed. And so what a beautiful thing it was to see so many people take advantage and travel to Bismarck, travel to our cathedral to walk through those holy doors of mercy. And so, in fact, just a few hours ago in Rome, Pope Francis closed the holy doors of St. Peter's, the last holy doors to close for this Year of Mercy. And so those will remain closed until the next Jubilee year, whenever the Holy Father calls for that. Pope Francis made a wonderful point this morning in his homily. He said, even though the doors of mercy are now closed, he said the true door of mercy always remains open. And that door of mercy that's always open is the heart of Christ. And so we can continue, of course, to go to Jesus to receive the mercy that he wants us all to have in our lives. The second thing I wanted to highlight, and some of us may have forgotten about it by now, way back in March during Lent, we had the 24 hours of mercy here at the cathedral, in which literally hundreds and hundreds and hundreds, nearly 500 people, received the sacrament of confession in a 24-hour period in this very cathedral. And so what a wonderful outpouring of God's mercy that was last Lent. And thirdly, just a few weeks ago, the diocese hosted in a very successful way our Diocesan Thirst Conference down at the Civic Center, focusing on the great gift of mercy. And so let's make sure at some point during Mass this morning, we give thanks to Almighty God for this Year of Mercy, for our Holy Father's willingness to offer this to the Church and to the world during these last 12 months. Second reason today is significant, everyone. It's the feast day, the great solemnity of Christ the King, where we end this church year and begin a new one next week with the beginning of Advent. More on that in a second. And third, 5 weeks from today is Christmas, which means 35 shopping days left. Fear not, plenty of time, especially for us guys. We don't need 35 days. We just need one. December 24th is enough for us. And so even though there's 35, for all of you sisters and moms and wives, guys, December 24th, we still got 34 days till that. But the main reason I wanted to offer point number two this morning on Christ the King Sunday is because that's what we need to focus on this morning. The feast day of Christ the King, as I mentioned, ends the church year. But I want to raise to us a certain objection many of us have in our hearts towards things like kings and kingship and kingdoms. What do we mean by that? For we as Americans, kings and kingships and kingdoms are a very hard pill to swallow. Why do I say that? This country was founded in rejection to a king, in rejection to a monarchy, right? We were sick of the king. That's why we came here. We were sick and tired of the king. And so in some ways, everyone, it's in our very blood as Americans to be resistant to a king in any semblance of kingdoms and kingships, right? Don't you think that as Americans, we have a hard time with that? We don't quite get it. In fact, when our founding fathers established our Constitution and established this country, who did they say would lead us? Not kings and queens, but elected people like presidents and other folks like that. So we have it in our DNA, in our blood, to be resistant to kings. But guess what? Somebody else has been resistant to a king. Somebody else said, I don't want a king. Guess who that person was? God. What do we mean by that? Depending on how well we know our Old Testament, everyone, what did God, the Father Almighty, creator of heaven and earth, not want to give the people of Israel? He didn't want to give them an earthly king. Why? Because he wanted to be their king. And he wanted to provide for them through the law and the prophets. He wanted to be the one that shepherded them and guided them and protected them and provided for them. That God himself wanted to be the king for the chosen people of Israel, right? Remember that in the Old Testament? They wanted a king. And God said, I want to be your king. But they insisted and they continued to beg. And eventually, what do? They started to point to other nations. And they said, look to Egypt. They have a king. Why can't we have one? And then they pointed to Assyria. And they said, look at Assyria. They have a king. Why can't we have an earthly king? And what did God finally do? He acquiesced and gave them what they wanted. And he gave them a king, an earthly king. He gave them Saul, then he gave them David, then he gave them Solomon. And I could keep on going, but I won't. And some of these kings were great, great leaders, great men, great rulers. And some of them were terrible. King David, we just heard in the first reading this morning from Samuel, we heard about how he was anointed king. King David was a great king, even though he had some skeletons in the closet. He was a great shepherd. He was the great uniter of the northern and southern kingdom of Israel. But what soon happened, everyone, if we look at the Old Testament, is that we realize that this wasn't working. That God realized that these kings I am choosing, that the people are selecting, it's not working for the people of Israel. It's not working. What's the proof that it wasn't working? You had exiles, and you had all sorts of terrible things that happened to the people of Israel. Remember? And in the course of human history, in God's tremendous providence, what did he eventually give to them? He gave them a new king. He gave them a new king. And what did that king look like? Well, he was born into poverty. He was raised in the backwaters town of Nazareth in Galilee. He worked great miracles and healed people, raised the dead. But he eventually was rejected and mocked and crucified. What was God trying to do by making Jesus king? Very simple. He was going back to his original desire of wanting to be their king, of he himself wanting to be their king. Everyone, in the second reading today, St. Paul to the Colossians, what does St. Paul say? That he, Jesus, is the image of the invisible God. So by God taking on human flesh and becoming man and becoming our king, what was he doing? What he always wanted to do, to be our king. I can't tell you how many times I've heard or even thought for myself this train of thinking. Why doesn't God show himself more? Right? Like, why doesn't God just make himself more clear? Why does he have to be so, you know, unpredictable? Why doesn't he speak and act with greater clarity? And every time I think that, or every time I hear that, do you know what I go back to? This letter to the Colossians, that he is the image of the invisible God. So why does God not make himself more clear? Why doesn't God show himself? He has. His name is Jesus. How much more clear could you get? God has shown himself. And we killed him. We did. We rejected him. We said, he's not good enough for us. We want someone else. But he didn't remain dead, did he? He rose, and he's alive, and he reigns today. But the question is, where does he reign? Where is God's kingdom at? Right? If he's a king, doesn't he have a kingdom? Where is it? Where is it? Well, heaven, of course, right? But where else is his kingdom? Because Jesus says that his kingdom is among us. Where is it? We find the answer in the Our Father. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done. Which means, everyone, that wherever God's will is being done is where his kingdom reigns. Wherever you and I are doing God's will is where his kingdom is alive and powerful and real. Which means, right, that if in my own life I'm doing God's will, that his kingdom is alive and effective in me. Which means that if God is alive and his will is being done in this parish, that his kingdom is here among us. Which means that if God's will is being done in your families and in your marriages, that his kingdom is alive and reigning in your own families and marriages. Wherever God's will is being done is where his kingdom is. Over the last couple days, I've been using this feast day of Christ the King as a kind of examination of conscience in my own life. And I've simply been asking God, where are you king in my life? And where are you not the king? What areas of my life are outside of your kingship and need to be brought into your kingship? We all have it. The feast day of Christ the King is an invitation to bring all areas of our life under the lordship and kingship of Jesus Christ. That's what this feast day is about. Bringing those areas outside of his will, outside of his kingship, underneath his reign. Where are those places? And this feast day is about accepting the great invitation to bring everything in our lives under the kingship of Jesus Christ, the King.